We're going to go back now to 1974. That's the year that a man named Ron Stallworth joined the Colorado Springs Police Department. And at the time, he was the only black man on the force.
I had no intentions of being a cop for an extended period of time. It was just a means to an end for me at that moment.
Ron had another idea for how his life would play out.
Go to college, get a degree, become a high school PE teacher, put all this other nonsense aside. A year into it, I realized, A, I was having too much fun, and B, I was making twice as much money as a college graduate at that time who was a teacher.
So he stayed on the job. In 1978, Ron came across a classified ad for a local chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. The Colorado Springs Police Department was concerned about Klan activities at the time, and Ron decided to go undercover and respond to the ad. Not long after, he got a phone call from a Klan member named Ken Odell. And just a warning that Ron uses some offensive language here.
From the very first phone call I had with Ken Odell after I wrote the note telling him that I hated Mexican spics, Jews, Japs, da-da-da-da-da-da, when he called me about a week or two later and said, I got your note. You have some very interesting ideas. Why do you want to join the Klan? And I repeated that, and then I thought I'd spice it up. And that's when I said, my sister is dating a N-word, and every time he puts his filthy black hands on her pure white body, it makes me cringe. It pisses me off. I want to do something to stop that abuse. His response, you're just the kind of guy we're looking for. When can we meet? So that moment, Ken was hooked. The challenge from that moment on was to reel him in tighter so that any doubt in his mind would not arise or would fall by the wayside. And that was where Chuck came in.
Chuck was a white undercover narcotics cop. Chuck is not his real name, but the one Ron uses when telling his story. And for face-to-face meetings with Klan members, Chuck pretended to be Ron Stallworth.
Chuck had to carry on everything I was doing on the phone, in person, to solidify that hook that we had planted, that I had planted in Ken. When you're undercover, the first minutes of that undercover assignment are very vital. You have to be convincing for that person to trust you enough to commit the criminal act or whatever it is that you're trying to engage him in. And if he is not trusting of you and believing who you are or what you say you are, you're not going to go anywhere.
What were you feeling when you were going through this, when you were actually involved in the case?
Talking to David Duke or any of those guys, I had to put on a performance over the phone. I had to convince them through my voice, through my words, through the inflection of tone that I projected those words, I had to convince them that I was one of them or wanted to be one of them. And that was the big challenge. By simply talking to someone on the phone, can you convince them that you are a white supremacist, even though you're black and hate their guts? Can you convince them to the point where they will start cooperating with you and give you the information you were seeking?
Ron was so convincing that members of the KKK never caught on. His story remained classified until he retired from the force in 2006. Ron's work helped the Colorado Springs Police Department foil a bomb plot, identify Army personnel who were in the Klan, and exposed where the local group kept their money. Today, when people talk to Ron about how he infiltrated the KKK, they're still often skeptical that a black man could have done it. His colleagues 40 years ago said the same thing.
When I asked for the use of Chuck, his lieutenant said it won't work because the minute Chuck walks in the door and starts talking to them, they'll know that they have been talking to a black man on the phone. My response was, what does a black man sound like? The response I got was dead silence. I asked again, what does a black man sound like? Silence. I've often been asked, did you talk like a white man? Did you change your voice? Did you alter your voice? And the response is no. I talked to them on the phone exactly as I'm talking to you right now. When you're undercover, you don't disguise your voice. You don't do anything like that because you have to remain as true to your true identity as you possibly can, because if you try to alter it in any way, unless you're extremely good, you could slip up, and that could be the difference between whether you walk out of the encounter alive or not. So you always be who you are, and I was Ron Stallworth talking just like I'm talking now.
This week, director Spike Lee is bringing Ron's story to the screen in the new movie Black Klansman. I sat down with Ron as well as John David Washington, the actor who plays him in the film. John David says he found it easy to relate to questions of how a black cop like Ron could infiltrate the KKK using his regular voice.
You know, it's interesting about the white voice. I mean, I went to a private school. You know, I would go into bar mitzvahs, went to a black college. I have family from the South. I spent summers also in, you know, in Italy. So what am I supposed to sound like? You know what I mean? I have all these different experiences that are a part of me. I've been called the N-word at 10 years old in North Carolina. So I don't different languages. I feel like Ron was speaking the language of hate to infiltrate it. You know, so there was like, just like you speak Spanish, you speak French, where, you know, you had to be able to speak hate to be able to get in with these guys, and he was able to. So white voice or whatever, I didn't think about it that way at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously Ron didn't either.
We're also in a moment right now where a lot of what came up in the film, a lot of the issues that came up in the film, so many issues. I have like big notes here just wanting to ask you about everything from, you know, what it was like navigating being a black man in that moment. There seems to be this duality, right, both of the character and the person, particularly when you start the film and there's the Stokely Carmichael speech, and you're there as a cop, but you're also there with fellow black Americans, and in that moment wanting to sort of feel like you're part of it, but you're also on the other side of it. And I'm wondering, what was that duality like for you as a police officer, and what was that duality like for you as the actor playing that?
John David did a good job of expressing that emotion. If anything, it was underserved. It could have been emphasized a lot more, because the real incident that I had on that occasion undercover in the bar monitoring Stokely's speech, there were a lot of so-called ghetto celebrities that were in the bar, the drug dealers, pimps, prostitutes, people of that nature, and a lot of black citizens, upstanding members of the community who were there as well. And I was a uniformed police officer. I was a little bit concerned, this being my first undercover assignment, I was a little bit concerned about people in the audience recognizing me from my uniform day-to-day work, where I had written a ticket here or had an encounter there. So I had that apprehension going in. Never having worked undercover, the butterflies were in my stomach, because this was the first time being undercover. So Stokely gives his speech. He starts his speech. Very powerful speaker. The man was dynamic. And he starts talking about the conditions that we as black people were under at that time. Now, I'm a black man first before I was a black cop. And when I take that uniform and badge off, I am still a black man in America.
Yes, sir.
So
yes, sir.
I'm listening to Stokely's speech, and he's talking about the white man has done this, we need to get guns and everything, and I'm thinking to myself, that makes sense to me. As a black man in America, that makes sense to me. And when they started yelling right on and giving him the approbation of right on and preach, brother, and black power, all of a sudden, my hand went up, and I said, right on. And then it dawned on me, you're undercover. You're a cop. You can't be doing this. And I put my hand down. I got caught up in his speech, in his rhetoric. He was very powerful, mesmerizing. And he demonstrated on that night the power that a person can have simply using words.
John David, when you're preparing for this role, what are you tapping into?
It's sort of a process. It's a gumbo, you know. It's of the varietal sense. You know, I was my way in, I guess, was music. I didn't listen to any hip hop or R&B for almost 3 months. You know, I went to sleep to Soul Train. You know, I got to know some of, you know, Ron listened to. I tapped into some of my uncles. You know, my mom. I got a lot of help on you know, what bands to listen to and things of that nature. And then, you know, in those times, in that discovery, I saw a couple documentaries. The Black Panther mixtape was incredible. And just understanding what was going on in those times first, even before I spoke with Ron, was important to me. Knowing that I'm in a Spike Lee film, I don't think anybody could have told this story besides Spike Lee, Jordan Peele, because of the tone of it. You know, and not to make it gimmicky, and not to make, again, like sort of presentational, to where it takes away from the root of what was going on here and the serious issues that happening. Because of the way it's packaged and delivered, the message, it's enjoyable. It's Friday night at the theater, you know, but at the same time, this is happening right now, and it's been happening. This is a generational issue, you know. So understanding all of that, it was liberating, knowing that I'm gonna be taking this performance, what I give will be well taken care of by who's presenting it, and Spike Lee. So just be on it, and I owed it to this man sitting next to me here to play it as true as I could, and to almost what happened. The hardest part of it, really, all that research and all that time I spent talking to him and everything, all the information I gathered, is to let it go on game day. Is to let it go when he yells action and trust the process that my instincts with the research will take over and be what's best for the film.
As we said, and you just said, actually, John David, that this is something that is still happening. Yeah. We're still having these conversations. We're still seeing Black Americans shot and killed by police. Yeah. The movie is coming out almost exactly a year after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. Yeah. You guys had that at the end of the film, which I thought brought you real close to where we are today.
Absolutely.
There was no opportunity to say, oh,
think about from how it started to that, too. You're seeing the generation tied in, like the generations.
It was powerful to see that. I'd love to hear from each of you about the significance of this moment.
Well, I want to say this, too. I did another film as well, playing a police officer. Well, not too often do we get to see or hear the perspective of men and women of color on that side of the force. You know, it's a thankless job. It really is. And so often we hear about the police brutality, but there's some police officers that are doing their job the right way, that are serving the right way, that are about their community. I feel like that's extremely heroic. I mean, I know he doesn't like me for me to say, but what Ron did is heroic. So I'm saying that to say, I hope men and women that are protecting and serving properly the right way, they really do care. Go see this movie and stand up and clap for yourself and know that you are represented. That was sort of my mandate going into it, to make sure y'all were well represented. Obviously, Ron first, but everybody that looks like Ron, too, protecting and serving the way he did.
As a retired police officer, 32 years in the business, I'm very proud of my profession. Very proud. It served me well.
When you look today and see what's happening.
It troubles me when I look today to see what's happening, to see how often it happens, and to see how it is directed, primarily at people of color, primarily blacks. That bothers me. The so-called blue wall of silence that you hear about is real. It does exist. We as cops tend to rally around our brother officers when they come under attack, because that could easily be one of us. We as cops tend to strongly dislike or hate the fact that the civilian population never sees things the way we see it. You're not exposed to the things that we are exposed to. And so we tend to take this attitude that, who are you to tell me I'm wrong in handling the situation that I did when I slapped this person around when I shouldn't have, but I did? Who are you to tell me that's wrong? You don't know what it's like to be out there, to have to put up with this, to be called a pig like you see in the movie, to be mistreated verbally, and in some cases, physically. Who are you as a civilian to come at me? So we tend to rally around those officers that come under attack and want to erect this wall of silence to protect them. I was in that moment when I was a police officer. I believe that. It literally took me some years to move past that to where I am today. And I can criticize and attack my fellow officers when they are wrong. And I have lost friends in the police profession. Some were very good friends. I've lost them because I've taken the stand, because I won't stand with them in support and defend officers who are violating the law. I won't do it.
John David Washington, Ron Stallworth, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Ron Stallworth is a former Colorado Springs police officer and subject of the new movie Black Klansman. John David Washington plays Ron and is the star of Black Klansman. The movie is out in theaters this weekend.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.